Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Quite a bit to get to. So we're going to get right into it, but before we do actually get into the review of Raw, there's one news item that I did find worthy to discuss here, and that's the wacky world of the WWE and how they work and how they function when it comes to building up talent, or the lack of building up talent, I should say. The main event tapings were held, folks, and for the 8 or 10 people who watch main event, here's what you're going to see. I don't consider this a spoiler. I consider this news. Tucker, who just turned heel and presumably is going to have a feud with Otis somehow, despite the fact that they're on opposing brands, dropped his initial match as a heel to Humberto Carrillo. Now, you heard that right. Humberto Carrillo over Tucker. Well, there's a really good way to build up a new heel, huh? Because you have so big plans for Humberto Carrillo. We see how much you believe and trust in Humberto Carrillo. We see that. So that's disturbing enough. And Angel Garza drops to Ricochet. There goes Angel Garza's push down the toilet. Now, Ricochet is a better opponent. He's been used a lot better than Humberto Carrillo. But if you had major plans for Humberto, if you have major plans for Angel Garza, he's not dropping to Ricochet. Bobby Lashley didn't drop to Ricochet when they had major plans for him. I think he might have before they had major plans for him. None of these guys who have major plans are dropping to Ricochet. So I think it's safe to say that Angel Garza's big push is off the table too. Unbelievable. The Garza thing, at least he's been around a while. Tucker literally just got onto Raw and turned heel. And he drops his initial match on main event to Humberto Carrillo. Mike, that does not speak well of what's in the future for Tucker.
It doesn't speak well for what's in the future for Tucker, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I don't tend to watch main event.
No.
Too much to watch. You know, I don't tend to watch it. So maybe they think not a lot of people are going to watch it anyway. They can get away with this practice, you know.
I mean, they might be able to get away with it, but why bother? If their philosophy is not that many people watch, then you might as well have Tucker beat Humberto Carrillo. You might as well have Angel Garza beat Ricochet. For the few people that do watch it, at least they'd say, okay, well, these guys are going to be something in the near future. Please, this is not good. Anyway, let's jump right into Raw, and we start out with Drew McIntyre hitting the ring, saying he will be the champion again. He's confronted by The Miz and Morrison. Once again, the wacky world of the WWE. Only in the WWE would you have the man who just recently won the Money in the Bank briefcase booked to have a match where he basically just gets his ass kicked by Drew McIntyre. Plus, he gets his ass kicked during this interview. If this does not show you that the WWE is just playing by the seat of their pants. They don't know what they're doing from day to day. Because this doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah, well, The Miz is definitely going to cash in. I can see that cash in for The Miz now because they're so anxious to have The Miz have the title. they're so anxious to build him back up as a top player that he and his tag team partner get their asses kicked, even during a two-on-one interview interruption, right? Now, Drew McIntyre said all the right things and did all the right things, and The Miz is doing as good as he can. I have nothing against The Miz. I have nothing, and I'm a big Morrison fan. I'm a big Drew McIntyre fan, but what the hell does this segment have to do with anything? If your concept was that we're going to really make The Miz a serious threat with this briefcase, you wiped it out. You totally wiped it out. Not to mention that they did something that I hate. I hate it very much. The night of a wrestling event, a guy will fall off a cage, go through a table, be bleeding internally out of his mouth. Oh, he can't go on. You're going to have to stop this. There's going to be internal injuries. He's never going to be the same again. Next night, he's fine. Absolutely fine, fresh as a daisy, no problem, walking out to the ring like nothing happened. How are we supposed to take any of this seriously? This would be the equivalent of Rey Mysterio after he had his eye pulled out saying, I put it back in the locker room. I can see perfectly, I'm fine. It just popped out for a second. I don't like when they do that, Todd. To me, it just makes everything look ridiculously phony.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Drew McIntyre and The Miz, it just didn't. This didn't look good. It just looked ridiculous, phony.
Well, the thing is, McIntyre's supposed to be injured, right? McIntyre's supposed to have internal injuries. He was coughing up blood at the pay per view. He may never be the same. He may require hospitalization. They may have to stop the match. He's fine. And even in his weakened, less than 100% condition, he's more than a match to beat up both The Miz and Morrison. See, that's where things break down in the world of the WWE, and you just say, well, how am I supposed to take this even remotely seriously? Now we're told we're going to have qualifying matches for the Raw Men's Survivor Series. And it starts out with AJ Styles against Jeff Hardy. Good match. Good matchup. But here's what we get out of it. Number one, Jeff Hardy moves to Raw, and I don't think he's won a match, has he? I don't recall him winning a match. Jeff Hardy moves to Raw, and he's a punching bag, apparently. He puts up a good fight, but he doesn't win. AJ Styles still looks like, regardless of what anybody says, AJ Styles still wrestles like he's 25 years old. I think it's time somebody really acknowledged that it's not that easy to be in a sport as long as AJ Styles has been in a sport and be completely healthy and that wrestle at that high of a caliber into your 40s. It just isn't. And you're going to have to give him credit for that. He literally still is at the very top of his field. And rightfully he wins, but yes, Elias helps, I know. So that feud's not over, as we'll see later on. But what's wrong with this picture? Well, a couple of things is wrong with this picture. Number one, could we have possibly had someone else other than Jeff Hardy in this match? I mean, if he's going to take the loss, Jeff Hardy really doesn't need another loss. And I understand you wanted Elias to interfere. I understand the storyline. He could have interfered in a different match with Jeff Hardy. Did it really have to be this? I don't know. I mean, you know, at this stage of the game, I would say Jeff Hardy and Matt Riddle aren't looking too good on Raw, Mike.
I would assume not, unless they're going to put them back together, you know, in that tag team. But, hey, you know, again, I just don't know what they're thinking, unless, I mean, the way it's looking with Jeff Hardy, they're trying to bury him. You know, I'm just saying what it looks like to me, you know. I mean, he hasn't won a match on the show. He's, you know, and he's run up against, you know, whoever, and of course he's had his problems with the big guy that's with AJ, you know. So, you know, what can you say about it?
Yeah, it's unreal. You know, that's all I can say. It's just unreal. The whole situation with how the WWE seems to like just book by the day. Like tomorrow, AJ Styles could be dropping matches. Who knows? Nobody. It doesn't seem like there's any rhyme or reason to who wins and who loses. Just whatever. Anyway, Akira Tozawa and Drew Gulak takes on Lucha House Party. I was actually looking forward to this match. I really sat back in my chair and said, this could be really good. I'm glad these guys are getting the opportunity to show what they can do. This could be really cool. Well, they give them 30 seconds before R-Truth comes down. Why would R-Truth come down there? Why would he do that, knowing that they're going to attack him for the 24/7 belt? This, again, is just a ridiculous, nonsensical, illogical crapola. So Lucha House Party gets the quick win because everybody's distracted, and then they all go trying to pin R-Truth, and we're right back to the 24/7 belt, which I had some hopes after the pay-per-view might take a serious turn, right back to making it a comedic, ridiculous Keystone Cops type thing. Nothing to even talk about here. It was not good. We then get to the Firefly Funhouse segment, and this was very, very good. This may be my favorite Firefly Funhouse segment. Because I think what it did, at least for me, this is what it did. It showed very clearly that Bray Wyatt, and certainly now Alexa Bliss, aren't faces. They are very, very far from faces. It's just that they may have chosen someone who wronged them in the past, which they really did, in Randy Orton. And it goes to show that they have this sort of sadistic, weird sense of humor. They are very, it's very dark. They kill the rabbit every week now. It's become Kenny from South Park. And there's this genuine feeling of they're not the good guys, but comparatively to maybe some of the people they're facing, they're going to get cheered. That's the only way you can handle The Fiend. I'm glad they're doing this. Because if they did the opposite and they made them happy-go-lucky people now all of a sudden, I would say, well, this is boneheaded. You know, you don't want the Incredible Hulk. I know that's what this sort of is, you know, the old Incredible Hulk TV show where you piss off Bray Wyatt and you get The Fiend. But you don't want Bray Wyatt to be that squeaky clean Bill Bixby character who does nothing wrong, and then here comes The Fiend, here comes the Hulk who just rampages. You want him to be a twisted, weird guy, because then you believe that these wrestlers, who really normally aren't afraid of much, could literally look at him and say, he's not wrapped too tight. I don't necessarily trust him at all, to fight him at all. I think he's gone in the head. So that's a good thing. I thought this was an excellent Firefly Funhouse segment, Mike.
I thought it so too. The only thing I have to say about this, now I'll have a couple things to say about it later when she gets her moment of bliss deal. This probably, if they would have done this thing right, this probably should have been Liv Morgan. Remember the doll that they gave to Liv Morgan?
Absolutely.
This should have been Liv Morgan. But I have no problem with it being Alexa Bliss, though.
I agree that it seemed to be Liv Morgan's, and somehow she lost it. I don't know how the WWE powers that be decided she wasn't the one, but you're right, it should have been. Now, I want to mention that Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler confront Adam Pearce backstage, and basically Nia Jax says, since I'm obviously going to be the captain of this team. Well, this is weird because I thought the tag team champions could go to either, so I wasn't 100% sure they would represent Raw. I guess they were picked to be on Raw, but, you know, it's just weird that they'd represent Raw when they could go to SmackDown. But anyway, here's the one takeaway I have from this. This is the best segment either Nia Jax or Shayna Baszler has ever done. And I'll tell you why. Because of the timing and the fact that they kind of modified their characters. I thought it was excellent when Nia Jax said, well, I'll obviously be the team captain, and Shayna Baszler said, wait a minute. What, do you got a list? And he's like, no, we're not going to do a list. And, well, I got my own list. Shayna Baszler says, I have my own list. And Nia Jax says, I'm not even on the list. And she says, well, I had to do what was best for the team. Now, that is a very, very strong writing. Because here's what it did. It gave them a more realistic feel. Shayna Baszler up to now has just been this tomboyish, almost masculine figure that's just, I'll beat the hell out of you or whatever. This is the first time we've seen Shayna Baszler use any sort of comedic or have any sort of lightheartedness about her character, and she did it really well. When Nia Jax said, this is your list, I'm not even on it. That's hilarious enough. But then instantly she responds, well, I had to do what was best for the team. That was delivered perfectly. That line was delivered perfectly. Perfect timing, perfect cadence, perfect everything. It really genuinely made me laugh. And I said, gee, this has now upped my interest in Shayna Baszler, because apparently she can do other things other than just be that tough, mean, masculine, bully sort of character. And that opens up a whole new avenue for her, Todd, if they choose to go down that road.
Oh, you're absolutely right there about that right there with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax about the list. And like you said, I'm not on your list.
She's a tag team champion. She's not on the list.
Had a list too. Both of them had their own list of people.
Right, but at least presumably on Nia Jax's list was Shayna Baszler. Shayna Baszler's list, Mike, doesn't even have Nia Jax on it.
It doesn't. Did we even see Shayna Baszler? I can't remember seeing who exactly was on the list.
No, we didn't. Nia Jax just looked at it and said, I'm not on this list.
Yeah, and to me, if we're not seeing who's on the list, I mean, it would make – they've been trying for a long time to bring Shayna Baszler's running buddies into the act, you know, Shafir and Duke into the act. If we're not seeing who's on the list and they're not on that list, that's a mistake. But that's a little niggling mistake in my mind. But anyway, yeah, that's comedic. That's good. And look, it also furthers the possible split that we know is coming.
Absolutely. And it furthers who you might root for. See, this is the problem that they had with Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, is you say to yourself, well, neither one of them are very liked. One of them is a bully and a arrogant, mean, whatever, and the other one is, you know, in real life, has injured a lot of people and fans aren't into her, and it's going to be very tough to get any interest for this. Well, if you can do this, you might get some people rooting for Shayna Baszler. Because it would take a lot of balls to not put your tag team championship partner on the list. So I thought that was great. I really did. I thought that was a good moment. One of their better moments. Probably the best moment that team has had in terms of giving them some interest in the fans, or for the fans. We then get to Elias and Keith Lee, and this is another qualifying match. And I guess everybody knows what's going to happen by now. Elias interfered with Jeff Hardy, so naturally Jeff Hardy's going to interfere with Elias. He didn't really come out, but the music played. Couple of problems with this. Jeff Hardy not coming out makes it look a little bit cowardly. He does later and hit him with the guitar, but initially he didn't. Number two, Keith Lee needs help to beat Elias. It looked like the way they booked this match, Elias was seconds away from winning. He was going up to the top rope for his finisher, and Keith Lee was not moving. And I say to myself, you're doing a weird thing here. Again, Jeff Hardy, I know he was attacked earlier. I know he was cost a shot at his Survivor Series team and all that. But Jeff Hardy's motivation should still be, I understand why Elias is doing it. I'm trying as hard as I can to get him to understand I didn't do this. It's not. It's just like, I'll get revenge because you're an idiot. He's not an idiot. That's what he believes. And also, WWE, it's going to be very hard for you to make Elias a heel when you keep promoting. He's number two on Spotify. He's number two on the Billboard charts with his album. And it's serious music. It's not made up songs about his opponent. It's actually really songs. And it's actually really number two on the downloads. Well, I got a newsflash for you. That's going to be very difficult for you to promote him as a heel then. Because now the face announcers can't say, oh, Elias sucks. His music is terrible. He's not a real musician. He's a phony musician. He pretends to be a musician, but he's no good. He's a wannabe musician. He just makes up stupid songs about his opponents to try to aggravate him. No, you can't say that. Because you got to promote it because you're getting a cut of it. So now even the face announcers have to be, wow, Elias is number two on the and he's great, a great musician. Well, then what are you supposed to do? Boom? How do you juxtapose that? We must promote Elias's album because we're getting a good cut of it as being great and fantastic and wonderful, but you got to boo him. That doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. And I just don't get it. You're not going to be able to do this because Jeff Hardy can call himself the Charismatic Enigma, which I always hated that name. It just sounds so pompous and stupid. I'm a charismatic mystery. Oh, God. You know, you're not a charismatic mystery. You're a dude who puts face paint on. He's not as charismatic as Elias. That's the problem. Fans are going to root for Elias, I'm telling you. Now, in this wacky world of WWE where they can push a button, I guess you can push the boo button on Elias all you want. It's not going to happen. So they got a real problem there, Todd, because I think the fans, for the most part, are going to root for Elias based upon the fact that, I mean, he's delivered the real deal. He says, I'm a musician. He's delivered an album. It's real music. It's number two on the download charts. They're promoting it big. How are you supposed to boo the guy?
But actually, you can't to boo him because... He legitimately made an album. Album came out number two in the internet
charts. Yeah.
Regular charts. And possibly the album charts, too. And it's going to be hard for him to get booed out of the building as a heel.
It's not going to happen. That's the problem, Mike. They're promoting Elias as though he's a face with his music and then telling you to boo him with his wrestling, and it's just not working.
Here we go again. We talked about this, what was it, Sunday or yesterday, with the disconnect?
Yep.
I mean, they keep doing this crap with the disconnect. How, like you said, how are they going to boo this guy? How are they going to boo him? Just like, yeah, they did a lot to further that Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss are bad and bad people, but we'll talk about what happened later with Alexa Bliss and some of the stuff she did and was, well, basically wearing, but how are they going to promote him as a bad guy when he's this popular on the internet? I mean, what if they ever let fans in the building again, you know what's going to happen. They're gonna start chanting, walk with Elias. And
you're absolutely right.
They're going to start chanting that, and they're not going to be able to stop that. And even if they do, you know, turn the mics down and whatever, the fans will just chant it louder, you know?
You're absolutely right. I just cannot understand how they're doing this. You know what it'd be like? By the way, they did this, too, but at least they only did it for a second. It would be like saying, okay, we're going to the Susan G. Komen Foundation videos, and it's going to be all Roman Reigns talking about how wonderful this is and how, you know, the hardships of this and how they're working really hard. You can't do it right now. Now, they did show Roman Reigns for a minute in it, but at least it was just a minute. At some point in time, you have to understand that if you're going to promote Elias's music and you're going to say, hey, fans, he's really good, buy this, you know, he's really good, he's number two and whatever, then you got to make him a face. You don't have to make him a squeaky clean face, but you got to make him a face. I mean, you'd think that would be friggin' obvious. Anyway, on to the Hurt Business versus Retribution. This time it's an elimination match. And for the life of me, I have no idea what they were supposed to be claiming happened to Mia Yim, who calls herself Retribution, and yet the referee was clearly saying, Mia, are you all right? Mia, are you all right? Mia, are you all right? She gets in the ring, and I don't know what's happening. She's either become possessed by the devil, or she's having a some sort of an allergic reaction. She starts itching and falling on the ground. I just don't know what the hell's going on. It looked ridiculous. Now, I thought this was going to be a bigger angle. I thought something was going to happen. I thought, well, they're calling her real name for a reason. Something big's going to come out of this. They're going to reveal that she's really Mia Yim. It's not going to, you know, they're going to drop the Retribution thing. Everybody's going to be concerned, and something big's going to happen out of this. No. They come back from the break, and she's like, oh, I just faked that so I could eliminate MVP. Okay, because he's the main guy you want to eliminate? That's when you'd pull this to eliminate MVP? I don't even know what the hell that was supposed to be. Bobby Lashley and T-Bar eliminate each other, double count out. Slapjack's eliminated. Mace is eliminated. All it leaves is Ali. And he gets himself purposely disqualified and then runs away. And then later on makes a video how he's going to destroy the Hurt Business again. I don't know what the hell to tell you. You're making Retribution look like a bunch of ass clowns. I'm telling you right now, here's what it looks like. You can say what you want, and you can write me and tell me, I don't want to hear about your political views. Here's what Retribution is. They're Antifa. They talk a good game, and then when somebody gets in their faces, they run away like sissies. Or they have to attack with weapons because they get, that's what this image is supposed to be. We're tough. We're mean. We're gonna take over. Oh, my God, they're fighting back. Run away. That's what this is supposed to be. They're making fun of Antifa. And by making fun of them, they're basically saying, we're not going to make you tough. We're going to make you sissies. We're going to make you loudmouths who can't back up anything you got to say. We're going to make you cowards. We're going to make you tough-talking people who cry in the ring when something happens. That's what they're doing with Retribution. Now, you could have made them a serious team. You could have made them a group that you say, well, okay, Ali's not the muscle, but he's the brains. And he's got plenty of muscle. You had the characters fleshed out. You got two big guys in Mace and T-Bar. You got a guy that you're trying to build up as totally insane in Slapjack. And you got, what's her name? Reckoning, I guess, Mia Yim, as the female. And you got Ali, who's supposed to be this computer hacker genius. Okay, then you've got a pretty good, solid group. You've got your supervillain pack, except that they keep getting beaten up. And if they're going to get beat up every single week by, let's be brutally honest now, by a 50-year-old MVP, by Shelton Benjamin, who hasn't done a damn thing in this federation for a long, long, long time, and by a guy who just barely joined and wasn't doing anything even on 205 Live in Cedric Alexander for a long time, then no, we're not trusting that they're a really tough team. We're not trusting it's going to take a real effort to beat these guys. Real effort. Cedric Alexander was a punching bag before he joined the Hurt Business. Shelton Benjamin was dropping matches on Main Event before he joined the Hurt Business. Bobby Lashley's your only legit guy. So no, they don't look tough. They look like absolute ass clowns. And I think that's what they're supposed to look like, Mike, because obviously the WWE knows what they're doing.
Obviously, they do. And obviously, you know, we know what, you know, the talking about, and we can talk about this too, the whole thing with the business arrangement between the Hurt Business and the higher ups or whatever his name is in the WWE, and when they said we want the gold, we want to be paid in gold, which means they want belts, you know, plural, multiple belts, you know, and so that could further the Hurt Business, but as just the opportunists, I mean, basically what they're trying to turn the Hurt Business into is basically the APA.
Yeah, I mean, okay, it furthers the Hurt Business, but how does this help Retribution at all? I mean, this is just ridiculous. They're looking like ineffectual idiots. Nobody cares anymore what they do because they're just going to get beat up. We had a segment where Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are trying to recruit Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke into their team, which, again, was actually pretty good. I will tell you, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler did a pretty good job this Raw with their interviews and backstage promos and things. They both did a pretty good job. I think that's Nia Jax's main strength. Nia Jax is never going to be great in the ring. She's just not going to be. But if she can cut a really good promo and get people interested in the character one way or the other, it's passable. She's passable. And seeing another dimension of Shayna Baszler where she gets to talk a lot more with a little bit of a different personality is actually pretty good too. So we get back to the in-ring action, Drew McIntyre and The Miz, for God's sake. That's all I've got to say is for God's sake. Drew McIntyre threw around Morrison and The Miz like they were two little kids. And we are now supposed to accept the fact that The Miz, with the Money in the Bank briefcase, is a huge threat. He's a huge threat to who? Randy Orton? Who's he a huge threat to? The Fiend? Drew McIntyre? Well, I guess not Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre threw them around like ragdolls. For the life of me, I don't know why this match existed, because all it did was remind us, yes, we know The Miz is a mid-carder at best, and he's the Money in the Bank briefcase is his. He's not going to cash it in. I don't even think Toddy's going to have it very long. Something's going to happen, because there's no way The Miz poses any threat to any of these titles.
Oh, you're absolutely right there about, like you said, about The Miz. I don't think he's going to keep it that long either, and sooner or later, he's going to cash it in and not win a belt. That's what's going to be.
That's what it seems, or he's going to lose it. Now, backstage, we got the Raw Tag Team Champions, which is Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, and they're hyping their match against the Street Profits, which I am psyched for. I'm really looking forward to this match. And then Asuka comes out. And I don't know, she's saying we want the smoke, and I don't know what the hell's going on. And the funny thing is, we get the Hurt Business coming over there, and Asuka's just screaming in their face. Now, I got to tell you, I know that a lot of you wrestling fans aren't really into the acting portion of wrestling. But for the benefit of you people that are, when Asuka is screaming, because, you have to look at the look on MVP's face, because it is a classic look of sheer, there's not much I can do about this. I'm certainly not going to hit a woman, but I've just about had enough of this, and I'm done and walking away. He just looks so befuddled and just, let's just go. It was actually funny. His facial expression was funny. He totally sold that Asuka just got under his skin to the point where he was just like, well, I give up. I'm leaving. Very good moment for MVP, who really has been outstanding in this run with the WWE mic.
Right. He is living up to those three letters, you know?
Yes.
Right now, I want to say he's carrying it. He himself is carrying it. But he's damn close to. I mean, you do have the Fiend. You do have you do have, you know, Drew, and you do have Randy Orton and other people, but he's very damn close to being the MVP, you know, and he's not good in the ring anymore, but he doesn't have to be because he's surrounded by guys who are, but he's really, really good on the mic. And you're right, that was hilarious. I mean, she's doing her normal thing, right? I want the smoke or whatever she said, and then the regular Japanese. And we know if you've seen her her YouTube channel, she can speak passable English.
Oh yes.
You know,
she
can speak passable English, and the fact of the matter is, she's just doing this for her character. Yeah.
Right, and the look on MVP's face is what sold this whole skit, because the look was just so, this is so ridiculous, and yet it's aggravating. And there's really nothing to do about it. It's so funny to just watch him, just that look of on his face, and just turn around and walk off. Sold the entire angle. Start to finish, that was one of the best spots on Raw, in my opinion. So then we get Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler coming out, and they are going to announce and Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, and they're going to announce the fifth member. But then Adam Pearce says, no, there's going to be a fatal four-way for it. And it's Lacey Evans, Lana, Peyton Royce, and Nikki Cross, and I kind of figured Lana's going to win this. I didn't know how she was going to win it, but I figured she was going to win it, and she did. She kind of won it off somebody else's finisher. Didn't really matter. Nia Jax puts her through a table again. So we know where this is going. And I'll tell you exactly where it's going. Lana's going to somehow manage to win the Women's Survivor Series match for them. Somehow. I don't know how, but somehow she's going to. That's where this has to go, because there's no other way for it to go and actually be a story, Todd.
I'm absolutely right. Like you said, this is like the sixth or seventh time in a couple weeks of going through a table. This is like, still, I think this is still a punishment to her, and for what Rusev said about the company.
I mean, some of it could be, but it looks like it's got to be leading up to Lana winning this Survivor Series match for her team, Mike.
Right, and the way they're making it, let's throw the punishment thing off the side for a minute. The way they're making her look is if she's not looking like a face, you know, because she's this little sneaky little person who,
right?
You know, basically, they're making her the Miz.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know where that's going, but I do think it's going the way of they're trying to get sympathy for Lana, and then she's going to be that underdog who pulls it off at the Survivor Series. Let's see now. We go to the moment of bliss. This was really good. A lot of people didn't like this. This morning, a lot of people wrote me and said, I thought that was not a good moment of bliss. I thought it was a really good moment of bliss. And here's why I thought it was good. Alexa Bliss never, a lot of people said, you know, Randy Orton didn't fall for it at all. No, because Randy Orton's supposed to be smart. He came out and said, all right, I know what this is. Where's the surprise? And she says, no surprises. But you see, when she says no surprises, she's not saying the Fiend isn't here. She's saying it shouldn't be a surprise to you that he's here. You understand? No surprises. That's what she said. She didn't say, the Fiend isn't here. She said, no surprises. Meaning you shouldn't be surprised. He won't sit down. I think Alexa Bliss did a really good job. I think Randy Orton did a really good job. And then Alexa Bliss says, I'm really honored to have you on, especially after you and Drew McIntyre burned the house down. Now, it's been a long time since the WWE's went back that far in a reference, and everybody knows what it means. This is the WWE's way of trying to recreate history and say, we should have turned Bray Wyatt face right then and there, and we blew it. So let's do it now. It's exactly what that is. But instead of the Fiend, Drew McIntyre's music comes out, and McIntyre literally just gets in the ring and starts beating him up. Now, I thought Alexa Bliss did a really good job of just pointing and laughing at them. But the two are beating each other up because this is sort of what they wanted. This is the setup. As soon as Drew McIntyre knocks him down and sets him up for the Claymore kick, the lights go out. The Fiend is literally standing behind Randy Orton. And Randy Orton senses it. He never turns around to look at the Fiend, which I thought was a really good moment. He didn't turn around to look at him because then the Fiend would have had to attack. So what Randy Orton is kind of doing is saying, if I don't acknowledge he's there, I have to make my choice. Do I turn around and fight the Fiend, or do I walk forward and fight Drew McIntyre? And he walks forward to fight Drew McIntyre, which clearly shows that he would rather fight McIntyre than the Fiend, which clearly sells the Fiend's character, as Randy Orton is, in fact, afraid of the Fiend. For obvious reasons that there's a lot of revenge factors and everything going on there. That's a great moment. That's a great moment. I think they all did a good job on this. Now, you have to understand that I'm saying a lot of this stuff was good, but it's leading to repetitive matches. You know, Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton is going to, they've worn themselves out. And I don't know how many times we're going to see, you know, the Hurt Business and Retribution. That's worn themselves out. Lana being put through a table every week has worn itself out. There's a lot of things on this show that kind of wore its welcome out. But I thought the outstanding moments this week were in the acting portions. By the way, we should mention that Angel Garza also gave a rose to Nia Jax, which is a little weird. And then Shayna Baszler said, Garza? And she's like, yeah, why not? And that's an interesting thing there because I don't know if that's going to lead anywhere. It certainly didn't lead anywhere with Charlie Caruso, so I don't know if it's going to lead anywhere with Nia Jax, but it's interesting. At least Garza made an appearance on the show. All in all, I thought the Randy Orton segment on A Moment of Bliss, which was the feature, was really, really solid, Mike. I didn't have a problem with it.
I thought it was solid, too. And here's something else to think about. Look at the T-shirt she's wearing. Okay, the Yowie Wowie T-shirt, that's going to sell. That T-shirt's going to sell. And if that T-shirt's going to sell, I know you like the fact that, you know, the thing sold them as people that are evil and people that you shouldn't cheer for. But if that T-shirt sells like I think it's going to sell, How are you going to not cheer for the Fiend and Alexa Bliss?
Well, it's very clear they want you to. But my point is, I want to cheer for them too, but I don't want them to change. In other words, you know, they wanted you to cheer for Roddy Piper. But you can't have Roddy Piper suddenly be respectful and quiet and not the old Roddy Piper. You have to have Roddy Piper just simply be the same exact guy, except what he used to do to the faces, he's now doing to the heels. That's what you have to have with Bray Wyatt and The Fiend. He can't be any different. It's just that he's targeting heels, not faces. Because if he changes at all, then we're going to say, well, The Fiend, that doesn't make any sense. Why would he change? When Bray Wyatt left here, he was a face. Him and Hardy. So it's very crucially important. This is a very complex character. The Bray Wyatt character is a very complex character. I'll tell you why. Because if you dig deep into it, Bray Wyatt, the sweater vest guy who hosts the Firefly Funhouse, truly and honestly believes he is a good guy. He truly and honestly believes I'm doing what's right. Even he says the Fiend is a bad guy. Even he says, I hope you don't have to go there. I hope you don't have to run into him. I hope that you're prepared if you do. Even he realizes it. And he only has those slight moments where he realizes it is me. And then he snaps right back out of it and everything's fun and good and wonderful. That's a complex character. He's torn between good and evil. That's why he has the heal and hurt gloves. He's torn between, I have to stay happy and focused on my, you know, this is what my therapy is, happy and focused on the bright stuff, but he has to have an outlet for the evil. So as much as he's happy and bright and cheery, because that's what he's told is going to lead to him becoming a normal person again, when those evil feelings are brought forward, he has to manifest it, and he manifests it into the form of this fiend. And he lets it loose. In other words, it's like anger management, where you say, all week long, I didn't yell at anybody or whatever. Now I go to the gym and I pound that bag and I yell and scream and at every person I wanted to punch in the face. That's kind of what this is. And if he changes, then he doesn't have that anger. So he can't change. And that's why I'm saying this is a really good deal. And yeah, that shirt's going to sell. And yeah, the fans are going to root for him. Of course they're going to root for him. Because deep down inside, the fiend was never a bad guy. See, that's the thing. The minute he appeared on the scene, I said, he's not really a bad guy. It's not really a heel. It's going to be very hard for anyone to boo him. Because what you're trying to show is that this man is trying to recover his mental health. And he's way overcompensating by being this almost childlike, happy-go-lucky, back-to-my-childhood type guy talking to puppets. Because that's his happy place. That's where he can smile and be cheerful. But if you get him out of that zone, then he manifests himself into this thing. And that thing is merciless and evil and violent. That's exactly what this is supposed to be. And there are times when the sweater vest wearing Bray Wyatt hints, I know it's me, but then he denies it. It's not really me. He says, he. Alexa Bliss doesn't say, let us in or let Bray in. She says, let him in. That's what Bray Wyatt says, too. Let him in. Let me in. Both people. How do you describe it? It's like it's a schizophrenic sort of a thing. And at times we've seen the third Bray Wyatt, right? We've seen the cult leader kind of emerge because he recognizes that Randy Orton was the one who burnt that house down. So it's a very complex character, Mike, and you can't make him change. You can't make him be this happy-go-lucky guy as the fiend. You can make him be that way as the sweater vest Bray Wyatt.
Right, and think of it this way also. What they've done with Bray Wyatt, they look like they're trying to do with Alexa Bliss. Because before this, well, we know what Alexa Bliss was before this, and it was a skin deep, barely a skin deep. You know, I'm good looking. I got a, you know, yeah, she's good in the ring, but I'm good looking. I can talk, but I'm good looking, and I get around on my good looks. You know. Look at what they're doing with her character, too, you know?
Right, and here's the thing that I found most fascinating, Mike. When Alexa Bliss showed up to the Firefly Funhouse, see, she has always said it's the fiend that's captivating. It's the fiend that when you're in his presence, it's. She never said Bray Wyatt, but there she is with Bray Wyatt. You understand? So the fiend wasn't there. Only Bray Wyatt was there. It's an extremely complex character. And truthfully, I hope they're not going to throw him to the wolves with a loss to Randy Orton to set up Edge. Because that is not going to work in anybody's language. If Randy Orton can get by the Fiend, then for God's sakes, he should be able to get by a 40-something man who's had four fights in the last 5 years. 8 years. And is just coming back from an injury. That doesn't work. So if that's what you've got in mind, I'm getting by Drew McIntyre. I'm getting by the Fiend on my way to Edge. You're nuts. You've lost your mind if you're going to do that. All you're going to do is weaken Drew McIntyre and weaken the Fiend because logically, if he can get by Drew McIntyre and he can get by the Fiend, he should be able to decimate Edge. Unless what you're clearly trying to say is a 40-something injury-prone man whose entire career – was put on hold because of his injuries and hasn't wrestled in years and years and years except for two matches, is better than the top guys we have right now. If that's the message you're trying to send, that's a pretty lousy message about your roster. So I hope that's not it. I really hope that's not it. Anyway, so how was this Raw? Well, I'll tell you the truth. You know, I always go to social media. I look in my mailbag. I see what fans had to say. And about 65 to 70% of the fans thought this was a bad Raw. I don't think it was a bad Raw. I don't think it was a brilliant Raw. But I think you furthered Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler's characters a bit. That's good. I think you took a really weird turn with Elias. I don't know why you're doing this. Like Mike said, it's just total disconnect that you don't get that he has to be a face. I don't get why you destroyed Retribution and then still have them every week. They get beat up and then they do an interview saying we're the toughest team in the world and we're going to decimate it. Yeah, I know. You've destroyed them. So those are two bad things that you've done. But there's a lot of good here too. I think Drew McIntyre came off looking really good, except, you know, he should be injured a little more than he was. I think The Fiend and Alexa Bliss, they did an excellent job. Excellent job on the Funhouse. Excellent job. I think Randy Orton did an excellent job. I think that there were several things on this show that could have went a little better. But overall, I would say it's slightly, just slightly above average. So I'm going to give it a C+. I think it was, I don't think it was horrendous. I think there were some good things to take away from it. Yes, I do think there were some bad things too, but hopefully the WWE can correct that. Mike, what's your rating?
I'm going to go ahead and give it a C+ as well. And look, we talked about MVP and the whole, that whole segment and what the, what Kofi and Xavier did, and of course, what can you say about Asuka? You know, I would say that was almost an A+ segment there. But yeah, I've got to give it a C+. And look, that segment plus the two segments. And look, we still haven't seen her, Alexa Bliss, get into the ring in this new character.
Not yet.
Match in the ring with this. We know that's coming, but we haven't seen it.
Right.
And it's going to be interesting. But, you know, we know what her normal move is, the Twisted Bliss, but it's going to be interesting if she's going to start using the Sister Abigail.
I think she is. Now, Derek in the chat room is saying, I heard that the reason Randy Orton won is because the champion has to fight the champion at Survivor Series, and they did not want Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns. I don't know why you wouldn't want that. Why do you want two bad guys fighting each other? You want Randy Orton fighting Roman Reigns? For what reason? How is that better? It would be better if Roman Reigns fought a face. But that way, if he cheated or did something underhanded or had the Usos attack or whatever was going to happen, it would be thought of as a heel move. At this stage of the game, if the Usos help Roman Reigns win or Roman Reigns cheat, so what? So what? Randy Orton would have done the same thing. That doesn't make sense to me, so I don't think that's true. I know they might want to save that match for when the fans are in the arena, but if that's the case, then, you know, I would rather go with a screw job ending with Drew McIntyre than I would with a weird ending with Randy Orton, because that doesn't make any sense. If Randy Orton is staring down the barrel of the Fiend and Drew McIntyre, he can ill afford to lose to Roman Reigns. And if Roman Reigns drops to Randy Orton, that's bad. That's real bad. So I'd have rather seen the Drew McIntyre, because there's things you could have done. You could have had Randy Orton come out and hit him with an RKO. You know, and that's how Roman Reigns wins. I'll take the face heel thing for Roman Reigns every time, because I don't want anything watering down Roman Reigns' very slow progression into a full-blown heel. And Randy Orton could be that guy, because you're going to root for Roman Reigns. Nobody's rooting for Orton, if that's the case. Who's rooting for Orton? So I don't like that. I hope that somehow that changes. I don't think it will, but at this late stage, but I hope something happens that prevents that, because it doesn't really make a ton of sense. You don't want Roman Reigns to look at all as though he could potentially be a face right now. You don't want him to look like a full-blown heel either, but this would have been good with Drew McIntyre. Because then if he did have to cheat to win or use the Usos' help or anything else, then you see that slow progression toward heel again. If the Usos help him now, people are going to be like, so what? Good. I hate Randy Orton. So I don't like that. I don't like that booking. Todd, what's your rating this week on Monday Night Raw?
I got to go with you and Mike on this one. The same grade.
C plus. Look, here's the three things that I come away with out of this. Alexa Bliss and The Fiend is going to work out fine. Drew McIntyre is a good choice to be a top guy. MVP has single-handedly corralled three guys whose career was going exactly nowhere and has made them the top team. They are the top faction, as far as I'm concerned. And he's done it single-handedly. I don't give a damn what anybody says. He's done it with the microphone work. He's done it with his facial expressions. He's done it by not overplaying his hand. He's not some evil guy saying, I can't wait to cripple this guy just so I can laugh at him. No. There's sometimes he gives credit to his opponent and say, hey, Drew McIntyre's tough, man. You think I don't know how tough Drew McIntyre is? You know what it's going to take to stop a guy like that? But, hey, that's why we're the Hurt Business. Or, hey, yeah, we're not looking at... I thought his brilliant thing he said, Mike, was we never looked at retribution as a problem. We looked at him as a potential asset. Because the more they did, the more we knew we were never afraid of him. And the more we knew we're going to make some money off of these guys. I thought that was a brilliant take.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, look. I said it before, you know, earlier that's the exact same thing that APA would do.
Right.
You know? Remember when Ron Simmons and JBL were going strong as APA,
sure.
And they people would come, oh, we want you to do X, Y, and Z and go after
yep.
these guys and do this and we'll pay you. Well, they always looked at it. Those characters always looked at it as an opportunity to make money, an opportunity to, you know, get ahead. Yeah.
Yep. You know, this is what I'm saying about him, though. He has taken this team and he has made them truly and honestly tweeners to the point where you say, are they really heels? Not really. Are they really faces? Not really. They're neither one. They're just sort of who they are. They're guys who, if the right opportunity comes along, they're going to take it, which makes them so much more interesting than just an evil franchise of horrible people looking to cripple people. They're not. He doesn't talk down to every single ball. He sucks. He's terrible. He thinks he's... No. He praises some of these people. He just says, hey, we're better. I just think he's done a fabulous job. I don't think you could have got more for your money than hiring back MVP. He single-handedly is the most interesting thing on Raw week after week after week after week. Now The Fiend is there, so he's got some competition. Anyway, we'll see what ends up happening on AEW and NXT. Oh, by the way, the SmackDown ratings were out. It was 800,000 about, like I said, since they were on Fox Sport 1. Nothing to be concerned about because a lot of people don't get that channel. We'll see what the ratings are for NXT and AEW this week. That'll be interesting, and we'll talk about it on Friday. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.